This is a story about control. My control. Control of what I say, control of what I do. And this time I'm gonna do it my way. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. Are we ready? I am. 'Cause it's all about control. And I've got lots of it.
Hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Armed and Fabulous. Yay! My name is Mikester, and I, as always, will be one of your lovely hosts. And joining me now is Freedom Guy, who's the other host.
Hey, and you know, I just have to say, I love our intro. It just says so much. I mean, as much as I love the artist themselves, but just what it says sets us up for us to be able to spread liberty and what liberty means just in a more positive light, and makes us want to really get out there and just fight.
Right. That song is all about individual empowerment, and that's kind of what libertarianism is all about. So hooray! Hooray for pop music being awesome! You know, pop music is kind of underrated, and I guess I won't dig into like an in-depth analysis of that. If you want to hear our opinions on music, you can listen to our Sunday night show, The Rainbow Asylum. But that album actually in particular just completely kicked ass from beginning to end. And then she followed up with Rhythm Nation, which came in as a close second for one of our bumper musics, and it still might make its way onto our show.
At some point, I'm sure it will. Just for those of y'all that are new and that are joining us, Armed and Fabulous is here to arm you with the tools that you need and the talking points, as well as places for you to further your liberty education, so that when that's how you're armed. You're already fabulous, right? Because of the individual that you are. So this allows you to, we are going to talk about things that affect the GSM community. And for those of y'all, we don't use the word LGBTQ on our show. We use GSM, which is gender sexual minority. It's a little more inclusive, and it allows us not to keep adding symbols and letters and numbers and whatever else they decide. And it also allows us to include everyone. That is part of our job, is to make sure that even as we talk about the GSMs as a group, we also talk about the individuality that each member of that group has. So that's something that you'll hear us talk about all the time, and we want to make sure that you all know that that's what we're doing. It's kind of, a lot of people don't realize it's something that has been around a long time. We're just reviving it. We're kind of going retro. So, which I know everybody loves now. So, we'll be talking about
different. I love it when it's retro and cutting edge at the same time. That's when you know that you're doing it right.
Oh, most definitely. For those of y'all
when we gear you up for ideological battle, then you will be head to toe in the latest fashion, and it might have a retro edge, but it's definitely going to be hardcore, and it's going to carry you through that battle.
It most certainly will. And for further information that we don't talk about here on Armed and Fabulous, you can go to our website, which is www.outrightusa.org, or you can find us on Facebook at Outright Libertarians. Just type that in, and you'll be able to find that, as well as Armed and Fabulous, as well as the Rainbow Asylum.
Yay!
So now that we've done all those little announcements, let's get into the meat of the show, so to speak, because I know how much the Mikester and the Freedom Guy love meat. So let's start to talk about that.
All right. So today's subject is Stonewall was a riot, and You know, it had to be a title of a show, so we had to kind of title it something, you know. So I guess this is one of those phrases that is a soundbite slogan that people just kind of let it go in one ear and out the other without like letting it sink in as to what that actually means and why that's relevant to libertarianism. So let me kind of frame the conversation that we're going to have because in terms of non-aggression principle, because we do have a membership pledge that we take in this party which says that we will not initiate coercive force or fraud to achieve social or political goals. And that's a really important organizing principle that helps us build an ethical political theory thereupon. So obviously we don't want to point to aggressive acts as ones which, you know, those would not be a part of libertarian theory if they had been, you know, like random bomb throwing anarchists. But I want to make it clear that revolutionary violence in the sense where it becomes a defensive act actually does fit the definition of the non-aggression principle because we do get to defend ourselves from coercive force and fraud. And I mean, arguably the bomb throwing anarchist may or may not fit in that category too, but we're focusing on GSM individuals right now. And, actually before I launch into another monologue, why don't I have Freedom Guy give you some examples of how the state was harming us prior to Stonewall?
Well, there were laws on the books that, outlawed sodomy, which means that we couldn't practice any type of basically any sex at all. There were laws on the books that forbid men from dressing in women's clothing and women from dressing in men's clothing. There were laws that kept us from congregating, even in an orderly fashion. The reason that Stonewall was partially important is because Stonewall was basically a gay bar, a place for individual GSMs to meet, and the cops routinely harassed any GSM, whether they could be on the street just by themselves. A lot of times, you know, transgender wasn't even something that was talked about then. You know, it was just even in some of the Stonewall things that we see before and after Stonewall, those documentaries, as well as when people talk about it and write articles about it, a lot of time they say men in dresses. And there is a difference between our drag queen siblings and our transgender siblings, but very much so, the police harassed, and tons and tons of states had, and some still do, have things on their books that that outlawed just any part of our lifestyle. So the reason Stonewall is important, as well as the Compton riots in San Francisco that happened 3 years earlier, is the fact that we stood up. We said enough is enough. And what a lot of individuals within our community don't realize is, you know, it wasn't the gay man that wears a suit and goes to work every day and comes home and might engage in some type of homosexual act in the privacy of their home that was out doing this important work of fighting for liberty. It was the drag queens and our transgender siblings and for lack of a better term, our bull dyke lesbians that were the ones that so often are ostracized by the current GSM community and the fact that we all want to look normal. We all want to be normal. We all strive for this normalcy of marriage and the normalcy that the state recognizes us and that we are who we, that we are somehow okay because they have now okayed some law that gives us some amount of liberty. So when you think of that, think of the fact that even, I mean, now so many of our young GSM siblings enjoy so many more things than I personally did when I was growing up, and there were no, the characters that you saw on TV or in movies were usually portrayed as psycho killers, or they were extreme stereotypes of what we were. I mean, even All in the Family, there's an episode for All in the Family about a transgender individual that was friends with Edith Bunker, and it's an amazing thing that some of the artists in that time actually touched on the subject when the laws were still on our backs. And here at Armed and Fabulous, as well as the Rainbow Asylum outright as a whole, that's what we fight. We fight to get the laws off our backs. And the laws are still on our backs, even though we have gained so much. I thought I better stop ranting and let Mikester have a comment or two there, you know?
Yeah. So I gave up and I started chatting to you. But I want to put this in perspective because it's really, really important, especially for libertarians to really establish why that harm to the individual was significant enough to justify defensive violence, which is basically what happened. We flipped over police cars. We burned things like newsstands. There was a certain amount it could be questionable if you didn't understand. So the psychological impact of driving people into closets can't be underestimated. We have incredibly high rates of suicide. Living in the closet is a perpetual act of dishonesty that weighs on the psyche. People were losing their jobs. They could be outed. They lived in terror. Their relationships were stunted and in most cases not even existent because you could lose your housing if you cohabitated. So the lives that were lived by people in the closet were incredibly, incredibly unfulfilling. Like the individual rights of those people were completely hindered. Freedom means nothing if you cannot live openly and honestly and experience the fruits of prosperity in every facet of your life. And prosperity is not always measured just in money. It's measured in emotional well-being. It's measured in social acceptance. It's measured in a lot of other things that we were being denied. So people were experiencing marriages of convenience to men and women who they physically couldn't love properly. And those people were being harmed by proxy, right? Because they're stuck in a loveless marriage with someone who's lying to them. And all of those harms truly, truly justified that the individuals that those people were who were living those dark, sordid lives we're able to assert their dignity and stand up and say, we will not allow this to continue, not one more second.
Well, and we also have to remember that it wasn't the first, it wasn't like, oh my God, the cops showed up and raided Stonewall and we're going to do something about it. This was an ongoing process that the state and the police state, the cops had used to deny the liberty of the GSM individuals that congregated at Stonewall, that also congregated at the Compton cafeteria. At some point, those that were going out and saying, we don't care what you say and we don't care what the law says, we're going to still walk out the door as we want to walk out the door as we believe that we are. Those are the ones who had the courage to step out of that closet. And every time that they stepped out of that closet, they were beaten down. And just their liberty to just walk the street was completely taken from them because of the laws that were on the books and because of the police state that existed then and still does today. So at some point, after you've been beaten down and beaten down and beaten down, you do one of two things, right? You either go back and live in the closet and you live a miserable, stunted life that has no freedom, liberty, or happiness, or very little where you can find it here and there in secret, or you say enough is enough. You know, like network, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And you strike back. So when we look at the Condon Cafe and when we look at Stonewall, those individuals were saying enough is enough. I'm tired of being in the closet. I'm tired of you saying that I'm not allowed to be happy, that I can't have liberty. And the only way that they knew to fight back was for that riot to happen, to push the cops back off of them, to say, you're not allowed to touch me. I won't go willingly, you know? And because you represent the oppression that's happening to me, and so does that police vehicle, and you're fixing to put me in that paddy wagon, I'm going to turn that thing over and make it where no one can get into it by burning it. So that's a self-defense. That's protecting your liberty and your freedom. That's not a form of aggression.
Let's come back to this thought, because there's an ideological sequence of events that kind of led to the situation that we're in today. And I think we'll be in a good position to talk about that after we find out who is in today's crosshairs. So, you may or may not have heard this huge, gigantic hoopla that's going on about Capital City Pride and the libertarians who actually were told that they could not have a booth there after they had paid for that booth. And unfortunately, the most high profile reporting that I've seen about it comes from The Blaze. So I'm not going to point to that article a whole lot because I'm not a huge Glenn Beck fan and he's not really a friend of ours either. But his online rag is one of the only sources right now that you can actually, that's not true. If you are tuned into the activist underground culture on I don't know how underground you call it, but on Facebook, I mean, if you're connected to all those people, then you heard it making the rounds right away. There were all these posts going around. And what happened is one of their members just called the Pride office and wanted to know if open carry was allowed, which I think is a responsible question to ask, because if it's not allowed, then you might want to leave your weapon at home, right? Which is like the whole point of asking, which is that's what the person intended to do. And when they were told, no, open carry is not welcome, that's what they decided to do. And they thought no further of it. Well, lo and behold, in the background, the person that got that call totally flipped out, read a whole bunch of shit into the situation that wasn't even there, made this imaginary connection between this Libertarian Party that had paid for a booth and some patriot group that had threatened to do an open carry demonstration and I don't know why the word libertarian would get connected. Oh, except I don't know. Maybe people like Glenn Beck are the only people speaking for us. But I digress. they decided that we were all the same people, and that they had, in order to make that open carry demonstration not happen, they had to cancel the Libertarian Party outreach booth, which don't even get me started on how irrational that is, but to a greater degree, and because we're talking about marginalization and oppression today, what actually ended up happening, the effect of that is that a political group was disinvited from a political gathering because of their political views, which, by the way, I believe that's a protected class, right? You can't get fired from your job because of your ideology. So,
well,
I won't even go there, but
true.
I will. Yes, Freedom Guy?
Well, I was going to say the thing that made this far worse is the person who blew this out of proportion, the chair of the Pride, actually contacted the Libertarian Party. And for those of y'all that don't know, this happened in Washington State in Olympia. They contacted the actual Libertarian Party of Washington there, and they asked them, were they involved in this? And they said, no, we're not planning on doing open carry at our booth, and none of our members are planning on carrying open carrying. So the guy basically decided that they were lying, that you're telling us you're not going to do it, and you're going to do it. Oh, wait, the reason you're going to that conclusion, Chair, is probably because you're a member of either the Democrats or the Republicans, and probably because it's a Pride, you're a member of the Democrats, and that's exactly how y'all would do things. Y'all, because y'all have no morals and no principles, that y'all would say, oh, let's tell them we're not going to do it. And then when people show up with it, go, I told them not to. I can't believe they still came and did it. Because that's exactly what the Democrats would do, right? So,
right. Now, I don't want to kind of get into whether or not non-discrimination is laws are a good idea, because in general, they don't really conform to libertarian theory. But I am going to say that they exist for a reason. Whether that reason is justified is a different one. And I mean, what I really want to kind of point out is that I just looked it up. Political affiliation is a protected class. So in other words, whether or not that law should exist, nevertheless, it's considered unethical to discriminate based on that factor. It's considered a non-issue when humans engage in civil society. So the irony of, and you know, she is probably, her name is, we're about to say her name because we got to kind of move on. But she, I'm just going to guess, I don't mean to like generalize, but I'm going to believe that this person is probably in support of the non-discrimination ordinances.
Well, I will tell you this as well, Mikester. They actually had gates for people to go in and out of the Pride. And they refused some people that did show up that were open carrying, they refused them to enter the Pride. So if you were already knew this was going to happen and you had told your staff not to let those that are open carrying in, why deny the libertarians their booth if you were already
right.
going to be able to stop people at the gate?
Right.
So it's very much just a political game that they wanted to play to keep the libertarians from being at this Pride, to show that there is a choice that is about liberty and not about control.
So for all these reasons, today's crosshairs are on the chair of Capital City Pride, Anna Schlecht.
Thank you.
glad that's over. How do you feel, Freedom Guy?
Well, I didn't know who the hell she was before this, and I'm not going to remember who she was after this.
Exactly. Thank you. Another nobody, just like whatever her name was that did that to Chelsea Manning. We remember Chelsea. We don't remember you. And basically, you've just catapulted the LP of Washington, who I – just kidding. I've heard of them, but – I mean, I never – now I specifically identify with who they are. I have a lot of sympathy for them. Anna Schlecht, not so much.
And in a lot of ways, LP Washington got some awesome freaking publicity that they never would have got just by being at the Pride.
Right.
So, I mean, don't get me wrong. Libertarians having booths at those Prides are important because of – the fact that it is just a big we love Democrats fest sometimes, that needs to happen. But I think more people now know who they are, especially in Washington State, than ever would have before.
Well, thanks, Anna. Thanks for catapulting us to fame. Bye-bye.
Now, if you're going to act like a bitch, then you're going to die like a bitch.
All right, so moving on.
I just love our Crosshairs music. I just got and our sound clips.
I know, I love it too. It's really starting.
I mean, I love it when we say, "If you're gonna act like a bitch," I mean, what better thing could we say? If you're gonna act like a bitch, you're gonna die like a bitch. After we just totally reamed them a new asshole, so to speak.
Right. So, hey, I think we left off on the subject of I think we've established why a riot, actually a series of riots, was a justified act of self-defense. So now let's connect that to because we've and remember that the understanding there is that living a closeted life in fear of the state was a harm to the individual of such great. I mean, it just impacted negatively every area of a human being's life. So these riots happened. And so now the early activists realized is that they needed to normalize who they were to the rest of the world. And so the answer to that was coming out. So when it first happened, coming out was considered a radical direct action. It was a political direct action that was deliberately engaged in by the early radicals, and by doing so, they
well, and even up into the
80s
too. I mean, that whole coming out as a radical form of saying this is who I am extended for. It was a 2-decade-long radical movement that happened.
I get that, but hold on, we're in the 70s right now. So in the 70s. They built this idea around it that dignity was the thing that would replace shame. And that is how we got the concept of pride as an organizing principle for these modern parades. So the actual parades that are now called pride and the festivals that accompany them historically were political marches. They were demonstrations. They were a show of numbers in the streets. And eventually they became a celebration of queer culture when this dignity that we – this newfound honesty, right, this newfound individual empowerment that we had found began to catch hold. It was no longer quite so radical. And throughout – as Freedom Guy has observed throughout the 80s, and then when I came out in the 90s as a young man – it had become pretty established and mainstream and actually was beginning to have accomplished the normalization that began in the 70s. It took 20 years for that to happen, and we're 20 years later. Let me just allow Freedom Guy to finish the thought. Yay.
Well, I would say that, you know, in the 70s, when we did have those parades, and they were very much more political than they are now, and the simple fact that a lot of people were out to a few friends, but when that pride march, that political pride march happened, that was their moment to step out on the street with other GSMs and say, here I am. And so it gave them a sense of solidarity that they'd never had before. And that was, because there was that solidarity, that was a big reason that a lot of people came out of the closet. Because you automatically knew there were other people like you, and you knew you had maybe some form of numbers. And then in the 80s, you know, it became more of this is, we're here, we're queer, kind of get used to it. You know, it became more of a, instead of we're just going to show our numbers, we're going to actually shout out loud and maybe do a little bit of in your face, this is what gay looks like. This is what a gay man, a lesbian. We didn't really touch. At that time, we didn't touch on bisexuals and transgenders. And even during that time, queer was still a slur. Faggot was a slur. So then we come to the 90s. In the 90s, we have, we've gone through the 80s and the AIDS crisis and into the 90s. And then in the 90s, we have, because of the work that has been done and because of the riots that happened and then the preceding prides, we have people that are coming out in high school, people that are living as, that are transgender, that end up being killed. And then we have films like Boys Don't Cry. And then we have Matthew Shepard, who is simply, then we have this known as, you know, it becomes this issue of, should people really be killed because of who they think they are? And then we move from then into the form of, we have this new cause of marriage equality that happens in the late 90s and up until the present day time. And at that point, since it's no longer acceptable to really bully gay youth, even though it still happens, we start having a huge conversation about our trans siblings. And eventually, at some point, it's going to be where everybody has been included. I think we have a really bad habit of, oh, this is our fight right now. Our fight right now is marriage equality. We don't care what else is going on in the GSM community. We're going to fight for marriage equality. And everything else gets put on the back burner. Or at a certain point, we believe that we no longer have to do that. So even though coming out of the closet is easier in 2015, there's still some form and some amount of shame or some amount of apprehension to not be who you are because of the – if it wasn't that way, we wouldn't have transgenders committing suicide. We wouldn't have the hate that we see that still happens to where – that happens nowadays. So that closet, even though it's open for you, it is still our job to turn around and make sure that it hasn't that door hasn't closed on our other GSM brothers siblings that we have.
Yay.
And it's really, you know, Armed and Fabulous sometimes gets a little crazy, guys, simply because you have the Meister and the Freedom Guy, who both have a tendency to go on a rant. So Sometimes it's like, I wish the Freedom Guy would shut up so that we could have a little more dialogue, but
it's okay. I mean, as long as we're on the subject, I basically just muted my mic and started browsing the web because I know that I've been podcasting for 2 years, and you really haven't. So there's you get to where, like, you feel yourself rambling and you you come to your point quicker. And I'm used to doing that, and I know that you're not. So but the reality is you get to kind of practice that now.
You notice how that was kind of a dig on me, everyone. It was a dig of, yeah, come to your point.
Yeah. No, I mean, I know how that, I just know how that is, and that there's really no help for it except time. So my apologies, because when like I do hear that happening, I literally mute my mic and kind of start checking my messages. So
thanks a lot.
Which is probably not a good thing for me. Because suddenly I'm having to unmute myself and go, yay, because I have no idea what the fuck you just said. But I'll bring it back to kind of like a realization that the Freedom Guy is, I don't know how much older than me. I think maybe 10 years. But it's enough to make a difference to where he came out in a prior generation that, you know, it wasn't the original Stonewall generation, but it was, you know, the generation of the 90s when I was a young man. And I went to my first Pride in 1994. And by then, a lot of the hard part was kind of over. By the time I came out, we were beginning to be represented on TV. It was not too long after that that Ellen came out. And it wasn't too long after that they had the first same-sex kiss. And, you know, it wasn't very long after that that Madonna was experimenting with imagery in her art that affirmed our lifestyles. And so I came out during a time period where it was like kind of like a tipping point was occurring in the early 90s, where the people of the 70s and the 80s had really paved that way. And, you know, it was by no means easy for me, you know, even like, I mean, speak about tipping point in my early high school. I mean, I was bullied and I was very, very afraid to come out. And then by the time I graduated high school, a lot of that cultural stuff was beginning to really happen. So by the time I went to college that fall, and the internet was new then, I was able to begin connecting with other gay youth on they called it the electronic forum, and it was really cool because you had to type the prompts at the command in order to like chat with people and stuff like that, because there was no visual interface. It was literally a DOS terminal. But it was connectivity, and we were able to begin, you know, everything was changing. So, you know, Freedom Guy has a historical point of reference that I don't really have. So, I'm happy to kind of make space for you to share all that knowledge that you have.
I was in high school in the junior high and high school in the 80s and in college in the 80s. My coming out happened at the same time that the AIDS crisis was happening. So it was very much, and I was raised in a very religious family, and you know, it was seen as an abomination. So not only did I have the Freedom Guy had several closet doors to open, right? He had to open that one door for himself that said that it's okay for you to be gay, you know? And sometimes that's the hardest door of all. And the other closet doors were, it's okay to tell some family members but not others. Then it's okay to tell everybody, all my family. Then it's okay to tell friends, or sometimes a friend came before. And whereas I think – for those at the present, there's so many positive GSM role models that inner door that they have to open for themselves that says it's okay for me to be who I am is already unlocked. It's much easier for them to turn the knob and just push it open. Now, granted, some people, based on their own specific background, may have trouble opening that door, but it's just I don't want to say that it was harder for us. It was just completely different. And the and Meister had mooted.
No, I was actually listening, but I was also so not to just completely change the subject, but it has become so normal. You know, I guess the good news is that that coming out process that we've been going through for a couple of generations now has been so successful that today we get to take for granted the idea that we can connect on social media and pretty much expect that the person on the other end is going to have a social media profile that reflects who they truly are. And I don't know, for better or worse, we can send each other unsolicited dick pics, which is the thread that's going on right now, because I recently changed to my own picture from a picture of, like, for a long time I was using like graphic, not pictures of me. And so I guess when you're a human being on Facebook, you actually get other human beings start messaging you. And so I've been starting to get a lot of unsolicited dick pics. And that's kind of distressing to me, because if I want your dick, a picture of your dick, I will ask you for it, kind of thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, freedom is great, but that doesn't mean you spam people with your dick. Anyway, so we're chatting about it online, but like, what it occurs to me is that even though that's, I still consider it kind of, you know, rude or whatever, it's uncouth. But the bright side is that, like, we now have the dignity, if you can call it that. Okay, you can't. But in other words, that wouldn't have been something that you could have done then. Like, that would have been a crime. You would have been considered a pervert for that.
It also would be unsolicited pornography. So,
absolutely.
I mean, the thing is when I grew up in a very small town of about 2,000 people. I had 51 kids in my graduating class. So nobody knew that I was gay. You know, it wasn't talked about in my high school. You know? And
are you
if
sure?
Somebody said the word faggot or queer, you know, there was no, hey, that's who I am and I'm proud of it. You know, you didn't... If they started calling that somebody else, you didn't go to their defense, right? You were like, thank God they're not talking to me, was where you were at, because you just didn't do it. You met, you know, when you live in a small rural community, you meet at the park, you know, and sometimes you have to be very careful, because sometimes a person was only there to beat up homosexuals. The person was a cop just to arrest you for trying to experiment or trying to find anybody that was like you out there. Roadside parks, bookstores, bathrooms. I mean, when you hear about all that culture, and now everybody goes, ooh, how gross. How gross that you met somebody in a bathroom, or how gross that you met at a park or at a roadside park or in an adult bookstore. Well, sweetheart, we didn't have bars. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have a place to go. You know, a lot of times you met somebody because you knew somebody else, and somebody, and especially in regards to lesbians, you met somebody that you knew, and you invited them over for a Sunday afternoon or Saturday afternoon barbecue, and that's how you met the other GSMs in your community. That's why when a lot of GSMs graduated high school and went to college, they went to a big city college, and they all gravitated toward the big cities, because that was where there was a bar. That was where there was a GSM community that they could feel safe in some sort of way. But we just didn't have the tools that, or the luxuries that GSMs have today. And I'm very happy for it, and I'm glad, because a lot of our GSM siblings died, and because of meeting someone in a dark alley or a bathroom or a park or somewhere, simply because that person was there to do them harm. And now it's, you know, I mean, not that people that want to do us harm don't go to gay bars or aren't online trolling to hurt us, but it's far less likely than it was. And that's just something that I'm really happy about. I mean, how sad is that to say I'm happy about it? It's easier for us to have sex without our lives being in danger from other people, not to mention diseases, but I mean, that's the reality of our community, right?
That's the whole reason we had a sexual revolution as a society. And I mean, I share your kind of like, we don't want to, I'll put it this way. If a person either chooses or does not choose to live a life of frequent casual sex partners, it's their personal choice. So for some people, that's considered risque behavior that they wouldn't do. And for other people, that's a very normal routine part of their lives. And the point of individual liberty is that we get to make our own choices and make our own decisions about the way that we live our lives. And to add a layer of shame to that, here's where I'm going with that. Because like for me, I've lived portions of my life, I've lived a very casual and freewheeling lifestyle. And now I'm at a place in my life where I'm looking for something a little bit more stable, and that's okay too. So we don't really have to either condone or discourage manner of living, because, you know, that's empowerment. That's individual choice, you know, but I do think we can encourage the idea that we don't invite shame into other people's lives or into our own lives. And if we do, we're only driving back into the darkness of stigma behaviors that we've worked really hard to normalize. So I think that's something to celebrate. I think we should absolutely be affirming that that is something to celebrate, that if I choose to live a life of casual sex partners, of frequent promiscuous sex, I can do that, and I don't have to risk. And actually, there it is still risky. I was gay bashed in the mid 90s. So, but that was 20 years ago. Gay bashing does still happen, especially to trans individuals. But nevertheless, it's much greatly reduced. I mean, we now have Grindr. You can now turn on your GPS safely and notify people in your vicinity that you're looking for casual sex, a reasonable assuredness that you're not going to be exposed to danger by doing that. You're more often going to get a good time than a bad time.
About after I became happily married. So, now all the new stuff, I'm not privy to it. But one of the last closets that many of our GSM siblings have not come out of is that closet of liberty. We've done everything else. We've come out of the closet as a gay man or transgender or bisexual or lesbian or pansexual, whatever, and we identify as. We have open those closet doors of telling our family, our friends, our coworkers, and living our life as that, but we are still in the closet when it comes to our liberties and freedoms. We still think that we will be ostracized, and often we are, if we no longer are within that the Democratic Party. That is our final closet door to open, is to leave the Democratic Party and become part of the Libertarian Party that actually does support who and what we are, that actually does fight for all of our liberties and freedoms, and doesn't limit them and doesn't expect for the state to be involved or the state to give us those liberties or freedoms. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, absolutely. You know, I don't, you know, I wouldn't, so I would, yeah, I, coming out as a libertarian really does have a lot of, there is a lot of things in common. Now, obviously, what it doesn't have in common is that typically we don't get libertarian bashed, and we typically, you know, may not end up committing suicide because it's the pain of being, you know, bullied is so great. But nevertheless, there are elements of bullying and elements of sort of ideology bashing that we do experience. And there is a kind of shame. There's a fear of, it's a stigmatized identity, libertarianism is. And I do remember feeling a lot of awkwardness when I first began identifying to other people as a libertarian. I remember telling one of the first people that was, because I migrated from the left, and I was organizing a group called the Phoenix Pink Pistols, which was a chapter of the Pink Pistols. You may have heard of them. And I was approached by a libertarian activist, and I didn't know at the time I was a libertarian, or that that's basically what I had kind of put together was, you know, gays and guns go together like libertarians and, you know, the color gold. So, and I didn't know that at the time. And he approached me and joined the group and started going shooting with us and telling me about the philosophy. And I was like, I remember telling him, you should be ashamed of yourself. I am not going to, like, I'm not a libertarian, and you should know better than to tell people that. That's it. Like, I told him not to tell the other people. Like, I was embarrassed. I didn't want my group to, like, know that this convert. And, of course, even though Ron Paul was even, like, kind of popularizing it at the time, I was like, I was ashamed of that. I didn't want people to know. And for a long time, I didn't use the word libertarian to describe myself. I didn't want to. I just, I don't know. I don't know what, but so it shares that with some of the other coming out processes. It's basically, it's a shame-based act of self-censorship. And basically there's like a kernel of self-destruction in that, because when you hide part of yourself because you're ashamed of it, then you're not able to be fully yourself. So to deny the self-actualization is an incredibly harmful thing. And, you know, we do it to ourselves, but we do it in response to the perceptions of others. So the way we could take a cue from our own history is what I'm getting at, in that coming out and refusing to be silenced and taking that identity, reclaiming it and making it something to be proud of, can normalize it and make it accepted and popularize it.
Yes, and I think that we have a very much sometimes that, you know, we don't actually commit suicide, but sometimes we, by moving and coming out of the closet as a libertarian, there are times that we commit political suicide. A lot of times all of our connections that we had on the left, or if you left, or if you were part of the right for whatever reason, those people automatically just stop talking to us.
Very true.
You know, I mean, it becomes a why in the hell, you know, why would you want to do that? You're never going, you know, you get the you're never going to win. So you get that stereotype pushed on you. You get a... Well, now we're not going to be able to give those liberties that we talked about. We're not going to be able to give those benefits because you're not going to be on our side helping us get that done or voting for that. You know, you very much. I mean, this weekend I will be at the Panhandle Pride in Amarillo, and it was so funny because the lady that's running it was thanking different members, different organizations that were coming, and she'd already thanked the Democrats for coming, the county Democrats for coming. And then shortly, a little while after that, after she had thanked two other people, she ended up thanking Outright for coming. And one of the ladies came on there and said, don't forget about the Democrats. Why did she need to say something on a thread where we were just thanked for coming? Is she that scared? Or is it just that ostracization of the Democrats are the only ones that matter, they shouldn't even be here, this is who you should be looking at? I mean, now, that didn't happen by the organizers of the Pride. That was just the Democrats themselves trying to make me feel ashamed, or anybody that would come up to our booth feel ashamed for talking to us and coming out of that closet that we just talked about. Wouldn't you? I mean, I don't see it any other way.
I'm not sure what to say.
I was just using it as an example of the closet and us being belittled for our ideology and ostracized.
Well, I mean, you know, we even get this is actually maddening, but we have a lot of people who are newcomers to the philosophy who themselves for whatever reason don't want to adopt the identity completely, who are now kind of marginalizing us from within. So when we come into environments like, for example, Students for Liberty events, and we are like unashamedly libertarian, we even find ourselves experiencing a sense of kind of, being treated as fringe members of that group, even those groups. In fact, you wouldn't even call it as members. We're seen as like this, I don't even know how to describe it, because it's like the weirdest thing. But yeah, those kinds of social cues, people, it takes a lot of courage and a lot of bravery to defy that and to continue to insist on living your truth openly, which is what made it such a radical act in the beginning. And there was such a few number of people, and you know, those people took a huge risk by sticking their necks out, because had the movement not succeeded, they would have been walking around with, you know, scarlet H's on their chests or whatever, you know, scarlet gays on their chests. And the same would have been for those libertarians in the, you know, in the 70s who established the party. And to a much lesser degree, much like coming out is much less of a big deal today, although it is kind of still a thing, being a libertarian continues to have that. It's associated with this being a loser. It's associated with, being a wonk, being a lot of things that people don't
vote.
Want to be associated with. Huh?
A wasted vote.
Yeah, okay, I'm a wasted vote. Yeah, it's such a waste to want to be free.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand it. I do think that just like the Stonewall riots and the Compton cafeteria riots, we have to, the GSM community as a whole has to applaud the Libertarian Party coming together in Colorado November, I believe, of 1971, and having the courage to even address GSM issues in any plank in the original platform, I mean, that took a lot of balls, in my opinion. And that's something that, because the GSM history as a whole has been taken over or pseudo-owned by the Democratic Party, and mass media doesn't include everything that they should, that part of GSM history is often overlooked. And it's our job as libertarians, not just GSMs, to make sure that that history is known and that it's displayed proudly and is addressed in a way of how awesome and courageous that it was.
Well, all right. So you can, until next time, you can find us at outrightusa.org, facebook.com/outrightusa, or facebook.com/armedfab. I am Mikester.
And I'm the Freedom Guy.